On this episode of The Cooligans, we talk about so much. We talk about Corners FC, my favorite team, Arsenal. We talk about so much going on in the Premier League.
And we're going to be joined by Amir Lowry of Open Goal Project to have a nice, calm, realistic conversation about pay-to-play and the U.S. soccer youth system, okay? Yeah. With the Cooligans and Open Goal Project going to fix it all.
We'll take care of it. Also, at the end of the episode, we give you... this episode's like a ketchup bottle, right? Like, at first, and I don't know, but then all of a sudden, everything starts coming out. Right, yeah, that'll make a lot more sense.
We'll get to the bottom
of it. You got to hear the end.
Tune in.
Okay, so I hurt my back about a week ago.
Mm-hmm. Carrying this show.
Honestly, why did it take so long? Doc just said my entire spine is compressed. I'm now a foot taller.
Alexis is a slinky, apparently. Yeah.
When I sit down, you hear boing, 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 boing. So I hurt my back a week ago. It's not the best, right? I've been sort of limping all over this town. But it's starting to heal a little bit. But I've been basically just doing both these shows and then going home.
Morning Footy, Cooligans.
Yeah, and Cooligans, and then I just go home and I do nothing. I've done nothing for a full week. I've done nothing but try to stretch, try to get it better. My wife has been amazing. She's been super helpful. She's been cooking, right? She's working from home, especially during her orientation. Mm-hmm. So she's been like, hey, should I get an hour break? I'll start cooking. Or in the morning before work starts, she'll start making food so that when lunchtime comes, which is right around the time I kind of get home from Morning Footy or from Cooligans, I'll get home a little bit later in the evening. But there's always food. Absolutely amazing. So I said, yo, you've been doing a lot, right? So yesterday I said, why don't I order us some food, right? I got to go to the doctor, so I don't know exactly when I get out. But when I get out of the doctor, I'll order it. So by the time I get home, it's pretty much going to be delivered, right?
Got it.
Because once I sit down or once I lay down on the floor to like stretch and stuff, it's not easy for me to get up and walk back to the thing. The guy's going to be buzzing the whole night. Mm-hmm. She's like, all right, that's amazing. We pick a place. Like, I'm thinking like chicken tenders, you know, or like something, maybe like a Dave's Hot Chicken or fry, you know, something with fries or wings. I want a bad meal. It's been a week of good meals.
We understand why your back hurts.
We understand
why these injuries happen.
Is it sodium related? So I just wanted something bad because my wife cooks, but she cooks healthy, right? Not like yours, nutritionist level. But I was like, I want something. And she goes, I want something bad too. And I'm like, yes, let's go.
Okay. I'm glad I married you.
Right? And I'm like, babe, look under the pillow. There's another ring. Onion ring. We're getting onion rings. So I'm like excited, right? I go to the doctor. I get out of the doctor. I got the MRIs that I needed, blah, blah, blah. I call her up and I say, hey, what? You never text me your order. And she goes, no, I realized that I went to the butcher shop the other day and I got ground beef. So I'm just making us burgers.
All right.
I said, oh, okay. But we said we were going to order.
All right.
Like I specifically said, like, I don't want you to have to cook. I don't want you to have to like strain yourself to try to cook. Mm-hmm. And then we have to clean up and all that. Like just a day of doing nothing besides focusing on yourself. I got this. I'm going to order food. I was like, how close are you? Like, why don't you stop putting the meat patties together, whatever the meat patties, and I'll order. And she goes, no. I'm already in the way. I'm making us burgers. I'm making us fries. And I'm making us a salad. I was like, okay.
I got a number for a great couples counselor. Yeah, because I cannot believe she would do such a thing.
Honestly, I'm furious.
I mean, I'm on your side,
here's why I'm upset. Because all of it was amazing. Everything she made was absolutely incredible. She made a special sauce for the burger. Uh-huh. She went above and beyond, right? It legitimately was like a killer burger and fries. Great fries. She makes everything great. We live next door to a burger joint.
That's right.
And all I'm saying is, why put yourself through all of this? You literally could have. We know the owner. You could text the guy and say, yo, in an hour, can you drop off two of these burgers and these fries and this salad?
Okay, and this is where this podcast takes a turn. What's wrong with women nowadays,
bro?
I mean, what is it?
You know, the problem is when they stopped listening to us.
Okay. People are always asking, you know, when some of these soccer podcasts are going to finally.
Oh, wait, we're getting feedback. The ladies have interfered.
You know, when some of these podcasts are finally going to start speaking the truth.
No, bro. All right. Yeah. Let me just read a quote from my friend Andrew Tate. Can we actually bleep that so we don't get demonetized?
No. Just bleep the last name. It could be any Andrew. Who knows?
Yeah.
Which one? There's a lot of problematic
actually,
ones.
That's actually more people would be upset maybe by the other one at this point. All I'm saying is you try to do something nice. Try to say, hey, I want you to not have, because we don't cook like that at home. We're always out. But she was like, you're injured. And, you know, let's make some like good food. Just stay home. And she goes crazy. She whips up these amazing meals. I'm like, bro, this is me and you. Like, what are you doing?
I made
7 burgers. Now I have to eat.
I think that's part of growing up and maturing and being in a mature relationship is sort of conceding and allowing. You said like, I'm just trying to do something nice.
No. We did 6 days of me going like, hey, babe, do your worst. Get in there and whip it up. I want to see you in an apron and nothing else. You know what I mean? But okay. For one day, I'm like, yo, you've been busting your ass over here.
Sure.
Let me do something nice. And she's like, no, I'm making you burgers, which is like the sweetest thing in the world. If any time a wife is like, hey, I just made you a bunch of burgers, she'd be like, yes!
But that is the concession and the compromise of being like, she's basically saying, no, I will not allow you to do something nice for me. And I'm going to continue to do something nice for you anyway.
Yeah. I spit in the face of your gift and I present you with yet another one of my gifts. And I'm like, now I got a pile of gifts here.
Okay, so look, all I'm saying is that she is the debts.
Yeah.
Are piling up.
We really want to talk about this. That means that when I do buy a meal, it's not going to be Dave's hot chicken. Now it's got to be some fancy, very expensive joint.
Exactly.
Because she's just earned that now with all of these great meals.
She's an incredible partner and wife to you. So
she's a wonderful person and deserves the world. But bro, let me just buy Dave's hot chicken. Just one. Can we taste the burger guy?
Take a night off. What are you, LeBron real? James?
Seriously, be brawny just once.
Trying to play 82 games this season. Nah, dog, chill. All right. Well, I'm glad.
Less LaMelo ball, more LiAngelo ball.
So hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
Yes, I'm Alexis Guerrero.
Okay, my man is well fed. I'm not hungry.
I'm burgered up.
What you know about that?
Shoot.
As always, we're here on Yahoo Sports.
Yahoo!
Bring in all the footy heat that you need. We got a lot to go over today. Obviously, Premier League. There was some Premier League action this week. We're gonna preview a little bit of an MLS Cup with the homie Amir Lowry, who runs an Open Goal project out in DC.
Mm-hmm.
Just giving kids the opportunity to play soccer for free. And he was drafted in MLS to the Colorado Rapids years ago. And now he's a guy, just giving back to the game. So
he also may or may not have run for office. We'll talk
we'll talk all. Amir, it's great to be we met throughout MLS through years of going to MLS, MLS All-Star, MLS Cups. But I also, when I was hosting the congressional soccer game at Audi Field, Amir was playing in that as well. So he's going to be a great person to talk to.
What field?
Audi Field.
One more time?
Audi.
Okay, no, yeah, you're saying it right.
Okay, what did
it sounded like you said Audi Field before.
Oh, no, I did not say
and
that.
And I was like, do you pronounce the car that way?
No, Audi, like your belly button. All right?
Well, yeah. Just like it. Not my belly button, by the way. I have enough fat around it, even if it was.
Hey, like, it shows your belly button.
Yeah, it would pop back in because of how fat I am.
So, we'll talk about all that. But first, let's start with your club, who we haven't talked about in a little while, but Arsenal Football Club against Manchester United.
But I know we probably won't talk about it. Hey, 4 goals for everything.
Hey, nobody even remembers that Manchester United game.
Yeah.
That 4-0 loss.
Whatchamacallit? I think Arsenal did it the way they had to, right? So when you talk about Arsenal, like, who are they? Are they the club that are silky smooth, right, with Odegaard, you know, making these beautiful movements between lines and finding Saka and sending crosses across and all that? Yeah.
Mm.
Are they the, you know, bear down, Tony Pulis, defend to the end, score on corners only? Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
But can you mix both? You know what I mean? Can you do the good with the bad? Can you do the clean with the dirty? And I think this game showed you that. When you start a back line that has Kivior and Zinchenko in it, I don't think you're going to be that adventurous going forward. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. Okay. I took it as there will be more responsibility on the midfielders and those guys in the back are, especially Kivior. How do you pronounce his name? Kivior or Kivior?
No, it's Kivior.
Kivior. Okay. Yeah. Good. I took it.
You know, BMW is pronounced, it's pronounced BMV.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In Germany?
They say BMW or something BMW. Like that. Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we learn something new every
day,
buddy.
Isn't that crazy?
There's a W right there. Just say it.
Bro, you doubled it up for a reason. Isn't it crazy that it's two V's, but we call it double U?
Yes, sure. It is crazy.
Nah, seriously. That's crazy. Carter, help me out here. Carter, I'm not smoking my own stuff here, no? It's two V's.
It is.
The letter's called double U, but it's two V's. It should be double V's.
My.
Why are you laughing? Think of the letter in your head.
I just don't think it's that big of a deal, but clearly it's.
You don't think that's a big deal? No.
My best guess is that.
Are you out of your mind?
It probably.
Yeah.
Has something to do with, you know, the inception of the language, and you know, languages are usually derivatives of other languages, and there was probably somewhere.
I think it has more to do with the way during print it was harder to do a U, so they would just do V's in its place. Also, they couldn't do S's, so they would do F's, or the other way around, F's couldn't do it, so like the script F came from S anyway. But you never walked by like a really old public bank and it's PVBLIC,
right. Yeah.
When I was a kid, I had no idea. I was like, Pavublik? You sent me to Pavublik, Mike? I'm like, hey, I can't even afford vowels up in this joint. So I think that's where it comes from. But you never noticed it's a double V?
All right. Well, look, we've dedicated way too much time to this.
Bro, let us know in the chat. If you drop a one in the chat.
Put W's.
Yo, W's in the
W's
comments.
Or V's in the chat, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Let us know. Okay. Arsenal.
We were talking about Arsenal. It's Kivior, by the way.
Kivior. And
when you have Kivior and Zinchenko, first of all, Kivior won 100% of his ground duels. The guy was great, but he is not a like kind replacement for Gabriel Magalhães.
Without a doubt. He's
just not going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So venturing forward, sort of being able to stay back and you know, track back efficiently and handle the counter, which you know. Manchester United, I know they're not a counter team anymore, right? They want to play the 3-4-3. They still have skilled players that could do that. You know, Rasmus Højlund could still get past you. Marcus Rashford, who came in later in the game, could still get past you. Alejandro Garnacho could still get past you. So a guy like Kivior, while he does have great the ability, he has the speed to sort of pick back up.
Yeah.
I'm always afraid he's going to find himself in uncomfortable positions because he's not comfortable with the ball at his feet. He's not comfortable passing into pressure or passing to players that
making like, yeah, those bold passes.
Not that bold. I mean, he likes the safer the passes. So being up so high gives me a little fear that, you know, suddenly he's going to be finding himself having to chase back. I always thought we wouldn't be too adventurous. And the first half, I think, showed you exactly that.
Sure. But the thing to highlight here, we're looking at it on the screen when you look at the game stats.
You're going
to
talk corners, aren't
the
you?
The corners, yeah. 13-0. That's the game.
What's the most shocking number there, though? It's the zero. You got no corners, dog?
Yeah, that's kind of wild.
Y'all didn't try nothing?
A Manchester United team. To have just no corners, it just pops out on
especially
the page.
Especially a Ruben Amorim, you know, squad that's like, we're here to be high powered.
Well, they beat didn't Arsenal beat Sporting in Champions League? But that was after Amorim left already, right?
That was, yeah. But they had that was their first loss in like 34 matches,
right? And then so Amorim got to escape that loss from Arsenal, but
we caught you.
It got to him in this game, but that's
Scoring on corners? Is that what you want to talk about?
Not even just the scoring on corners, because I think it is very impressive. And, you know, everybody's been hyping up and giving props to the set piece, man. Yeah, because it's like, you got to give credit where credit is due. Yeah, it is cool. But more than anything, there's something.
Isn't it wild that Europeans are just like, well, you could pick and roll? Oh, my God. It's not as if the NBA has been doing that for decades.
I think the weirdest thing here is that when Arsenal do have a corner and It is a you know, when there is a foul outside the box and I don't know, Roberto Carlos is about to step up, you're like, oh, Beckham. You're like,
okay, you're bringing up a great point.
This is like, oh, whoa, there might be a goal here.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. No, we messed up. How did we allow?
Yeah, maybe we should let him score so they don't get a corner.
Because there is a confidence and just...
But the crowd knows it.
The crowd knows it.
There's an odd sound that happens when Arsenal gets another corner.
Yeah.
And the crowd's like, oh. Like, you can hear it. And I think the players feel that.
Yeah.
I think you're 100% right, because the energy shifts when Arsenal gets a corner, because they're like, damn, they're too good at this.
Yeah. And then when you look at the way they set up,
it's very simple. Six outside the box, like to the left or the right of the box.
Outside of the 6 yard box.
Yeah, the 6 yard box. And then five of them rush in, typically to the farther post from where they were.
Yeah.
So they'll run past. So here's the genius. You get to see if the team you're playing against is man marking you or zone marking you.
And
if they're zone marking, you got a bunch of guys standing by themselves, right?
And that's the idea that Amorim wouldn't adjust to this or
there is no adjustment, because what is it? Man marking? Now you've got six people not in front of the goal, and you've got your goalkeeper like, yo, where's my cover, dog?
Well, a lot of teams kind of do a little bit of both.
You have to do a mix. That,
where there's three
what
zone.
What team was it that was like trying to tap Gabriel Magalhaes and he still scored on him? I think it was City. They put Kyle Walker on him and Kyle Walker was like tapping him before the thing.
I don't remember exactly. It might have been, yeah.
But that was it. I got it. Okay. I remember my own thing. It's two Vs. It's crazy. It's crazy. I'm not going to forget it. There is a hybrid you could do, but there are like multiple versions of the Arsenal corner. There's multiple ways around it.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is that I was listening to something, you know, somehow my TV might be broken and I get Sky Sports sometimes. that's all I'll say, allegedly. And I was watching and someone's like, it's really nothing complicated about what they do. It's just getting the ball into dangerous spaces. I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about. You've never watched an Arsenal corner, at least not multiple, and you can pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie did a good breakdown of it on today's show, but one of the things he missed was when the players rush into they typically run to the opposite post from where they were standing.
Right.
So if they're standing outside the 6 yard box, we'll call it the near post. Usually they're on the far post. They'll run to the near post. So suddenly there's mayhem, right? And the ball's about to come in. Like, you don't have enough time to like reset, right? So the ball's on its way in, right? The person taking the corner has started making their run towards the ball. So you don't have that much time to adjust. So now you need to figure out like, okay, where's who? Most of those players are putting themselves in position to stop the keeper from being able to get reach the ball,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So Kai Havertz used to jump kind of into the keeper, and he was basically whistled for it a bunch of times. So that doesn't happen anymore. But William Saliba, when he scored with his BBL, when he scored them cheeks.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. And shouts to him, by the way. All right. If you're doing them squats, you're going to score.
Working them glutes.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay. You saw the bounce off that?
Bro,
thing?
We were all impressed. Okay.
Okay. It ain't just quarters you can bounce off of
damn.
That.
Hey, if you got it, if you twerking can score you a goal, my guy, do it. But when he scored off that, the reason his butt was out was because he's trying to stop Onana from getting to that half space that they've all drawn. All the goals are scored in the same place. What's his name? Partey trying to do it, and he was just way off.
Right.
But he tries to score in that little half space. In other words, not the center, you know, where typically you would kick a penalty to.
Uh-huh.
It's genius.
Yeah.
Because Jaleel Anibaba goes, well, you got to command your box. You got to step out. What happens if you step out? Now you're in that round robin. Now you're stuck surrounded by Arsenal players.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get to that ball. So to me, it's pure genius. And it's so simple.
And I would agree that like, to me, that's kind of the best part is that usually in most matches during corners, maybe one or two of them, the keeper just literally just picks it out of the air.
If the ball is sent in a little too loopy, keeper could just grab it. Remember, he's the only one who could use his hands.
But in this, you know, strategy with the way Arsenal sets up for corners, that just does not happen. And it can't even cannot happen. It's too risky for a goalkeeper to try to grab the ball. They might
You put yourself in the middle of the mosh pit.
Yes, you could miss it. You could also Onana punched was it the beginning of this season or last season when he punched the Wolves guy, but it wasn't called a penalty because he wasn't the guy that got the ball. Yeah. But we know Onana's capable of just straight up punching a dude head. And he's not gonna do a Manuel Neuer and not be certain about running in and getting. Right. Like he's just gonna punch the guy. So I think they just handled this well from Arsenal's side. I thought Manchester United just like you got 13 corners. You've seen it enough. You should be able to figure out a strategy that is fairly decent and not give up two goals.
Here's the problem. I disagree with you.
Two is crazy.
Here's why I disagree with you. When one team has something that's like choreographed, it's so hard to like figure out in real time. It's not like you could pause and, you know, get like go water break and then someone go, okay, here's what they're doing. What, if you stay
half
here,
time
you stay
is
here.
That water break. Half time is that time to have that conversation.
Yeah, but it's not in the flow of game. So it's really difficult, man.
In the preparation leading up to the game, I can understand you get beat. You maybe make mistakes or whatever.
You could watch tape, enough tape, but now you're focusing on how to defend quarters instead of how to score.
To me, this is a coaching thing of like, well, how do you stop Arsenal from doing this?
This is why every team needs a set piece coach and not just a set piece coach for yourself, but to tell you how they're going to do set pieces. And now you're in the NFL. Welcome. We're gonna have a bunch of people with laminated documents on the sideline.
Okay, get your Microsoft tablets.
You know, everyone's gonna be huge and have one of those things, and you're gonna be talking directly to the quarterback, which is probably your number 10. The one thing I don't like about this corner thing is that there's some fans on the internet, probably on Twitter, who are saying that Bukayo Saka's assists shouldn't count because he's obviously on an amazing assist run right now.
Uh-huh.
It shouldn't count because they're all coming from corners and Arsenal scoring too many corners.
That's the goofy
one. One of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
Okay. Yeah.
Dumber than calling it a W.
Goal shouldn't count if it's a penalty because he's right there and there's nobody really defending. It's just whatever. We can do this forever.
Yeah,
it's
are dumb.
It's a very silly argument.
And left footed shots don't count because those are weirdos.
They're going to hell anyway.
Right? Why are you even letting them play?
The other big talking point of this game, obviously with Manchester United, was this weekend.
Liverpool?
No. The rainbow armband. All the captains were.
People were talking about
this. Wearing them. So this was a big issue because there were a few.
It's not a big deal. It's just a rainbow, right? Why would anyone?
The rainbow's not gonna hurt you, I promise. But the Manchester United player Mazraoui, the right back, I believe. Yeah. They were going to come out like after getting off the bus and going into the stadium. They were kind of coming.
Oh, I thought they were going to come out to the line, the players' line with the mascots.
I thought
they were going to come out of the locker rooms wearing.
Oh, maybe it was that.
Track jacket.
Got it. Okay, I don't know exactly what it was, but there was like a training.
The whole team was supposed to wear a training top
and
a training jacket.
And instead, the entire team decided to because Mazraoui did not want to wear it based on religious grounds.
Yeah,
the entire team decided to not wear it in support of his teammate because I think they felt it would focus too much attention onto him.
It would alienate him.
And which is
kind of what he's doing.
Which is kind of it's okay. But, I mean,
here's the thing, though, and I want this part to be said that a lot of players in that locker room were upset with the decision.
Okay, which is fair. Yeah.
So I think that's also really important.
Which makes sense
because I don't want people to paint the Manchester United locker room to be indifferent or all the players to not care. I think a lot of the players did care, but if your captain says, "Hey, we're not wearing this anymore," or whoever, if the team outvotes you. It is what it is.
I don't know. Look, I don't know if we're gonna sort of. It's not even about resolving it, or I don't know exactly who we're gonna necessarily convince, or we're using our platform to really highlight that yes, things should be the football. And the Premier League should be inclusive, should be supportive, especially to a marginalized group that it's obvious how much homophobia and bigotry and negativity is directed at the LGBT community.
How about just highlighting a group of your fans that don't have an equal voice in the sport because they've been, you know, sort of pushed down or a lot of the chants are anti them, you know, things
exactly.
like that.
Yeah. So we understand. I mean, in general, we sort of comprehend that. I hope maybe there's a and I've tried to give some charitability to like maybe because there has been so much effort to remove some of like that disgusting language and chants and that homophobia and just that blatant outward bigotry towards the gay community, that maybe there are people that just didn't grow up with it and think that it's not that big of a deal, and having rainbows and stuff is like, well, why are they talking about this? Like, gay people don't even really have it that bad. Like, that's the only charitability I'm like trying to kind of give. But then you're on the minute on the internet for 4 seconds and you're like, no, like, there's no way that's it, because they're just literally bigots or whatever. So the idea that you don't want to wear it, fine. I get the concept. But if it's like, oh, I'm not going to wear this because my religion says I shouldn't do that. But there's clearly plenty of things that people do that their religion says that they should not, right? So I was talking to Carter earlier.
Was it Dembaba? Was that it? When he was at Newcastle, refused to wear the Newcastle shirt because it had Wonga on the front. And here's the only reason I know what Wonga is. It is a betting. I believe it's not a betting. It was like a what are those? Those companies that will put $1,000 in your bank account and then you owe them like $3,000 back.
A loan shark.
Yes. That's the cool old school way of doing it. But now the government allows it. What is it, like paycheck loans or daytime loans or whatever they're
payday
called?
Loans, payday loans. Loans.
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah. God, you know what? If you just merge the two things I said, I'm right. Payday loans. I think Wonga was that. And he refused to wear it because it was against his religion.
Yeah.
So they, I think for a match or two, they let him wear a shirt with no sponsor. And then I think there was some type of an agreement that came to. Sure. It's like, you're not doing it, but they are sponsored for the team. So you're accepting the fact of sponsoring. And they were like, okay, fine. So I think he ended up wearing it. But I get that there's religious reasons, but not wanting to show, I guess, respect towards a group of people just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
And it's also
Idrissa Gana Gay, right?
He was Idrissa Gay was at when he was at
with that name.
It's incredibly ironic.
Jesus Christ.
And when he was at PSG, he never played in the games where they had the rainbow numbers on their jerseys. And I guess I talk about this mainly out of like, this can't grow. This can't be the argument. So to not show this support, to be, you know, there are possibly gay players playing in the Premier League that are not out.
There's gay supporters group for every team.
Yeah, exactly. And there's it's really simply about it. All the rainbow stuff is saying is like, hey, y'all are welcome here. I know you hear a lot of anti-gay and anti-trans and rhetoric all the time.
Right.
But here, you're welcome. And it's, let's be serious as well. It's also like, we're trying to receive the gay dollar as well and right. make money and whatever. And we understand the business right. side of it.
If you're a business, it's smart, because I think the homosexual community, at least in this country, has a higher expendable income.
But Alexis, he does his homework, okay?
Bro,
he's like,
here.
He's like, he knows where the gays are spending
Yo,
their money.
Bro. Would I be happy to spend money in the same places? I'd be happy to make some of those money in the same places.
So that,
I just think it's stupid. I think it's bad for business. But I also think it's incredibly selfish. If you really don't believe in it, stand on your business. Be the only one to walk out and say, no. If you guys believe in
yeah,
it,
yeah, be loud.
Y'all
be,
wear.
Be loud bigots about yeah. it. If it's not just like, oh, no, I'm
be
I'm a
loud,
great,
be proud.
I'm a great guy. I just don't want to support these people. Yeah. Like, what that we don't think that. We don't think that of you, of just like, it's like, oh, my religion. It's like you're hiding behind your religion to be negative, to be bigoted, to be to you know, it's one of those things, especially footballers and what they represent and the role models and stuff like that. And it's not even me necessarily putting that on them that they should be a certain thing, but it is, you know, the Ipswich captain.
Sam Morsy,
who's like also doesn't want to wear it for religious reasons. It is the people that applaud you for that are the people that are going to, you know, deliver slurs to gay people. It's not just like, I don't care what they do with their lives and blah, blah, blah. It is they support it. They applaud it. They and right. that is and you now hold that for you hold that tiki torch or whatever.
Right, yeah.
You, and it's like, why would you want to be that either? So yeah, it's like,
it's ridiculous. And also, people think like you put a rainbow armband around you, and now you gotta suck a dick. That's not how that works.
Exactly. It's not.
if presented, nobody, with one, you don't have to. And they're gonna be like, but you wore the armband.
And
dude,
if somebody is suggesting that, yeah, they're really not have your best interest in mind.
They may be closeted and taking advantage of the situation.
Pretty ridiculous overall. All right, just a couple other matches to opine on.
Are we switching leagues?
What the only one? No, Newcastle Liverpool. I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that because a 3-3 game. Obviously, Liverpool
dropped a thriller.
And opening.
Shouts to the multi-view, huh?
Okay,
what a beautiful thing they just added. I don't remember Peacock having that before.
Oh, the
they had all four matches up at the same time.
What's it called? It's not called multi-view. It's called something else, right?
Pretty sure it's called multi-view.
I don't know. Whatever. Anyway,
we can have the argument. I didn't know without looking it up. I love it.
they usually focus on one game, and then
so it's new for the last week. They just added it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Anyway, so great game. The opening goal from Alexander Isak was.
He's what a spectacular player.
I just hope they hit, every time I watch him, I'm just like, just stay healthy. You're way too entertaining.
Does he give you like 06 era vibes, like those old school players, like Serie A? Like he'd be wearing an Inter shirt.
A little bit, yeah.
Something about him. He sometimes gives me Henri vibes.
Henri vibes for sure. He has like a and his build. He's like lanky and thin.
He looks like a bunch of brooms coming out of him. Just a bag of brooms.
Not the brooms. but that goal was an absolute rocket.
Yeah,
and again, it's like he just looks too small and too lanky to be able to
get
hit
that much
shots
power.
Like that.
He just delivers
energy.
What was that movie where the kid got his arm hurt and he could throw baseballs real fast, so he goes to the pros, and then his mom bangs Tony, the guy from Who's the Boss?
Tony Danza. What?
I remember that his arm would go.
Yes.
It would go.
That I forgot the name of the movie.
That's what it sounds like his leg does.
I think it's called Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year.
I think it was that one.
No. What? Did you change it?
I did not change it.
It's broken. I'll fix it in a break.
All right.
It's ridiculous.
And she bangs Gary Busey.
Oh, what? Even better. Oh, wow. We forgot that, by the way.
Good on.
For Gary Busey.
Good on.
Whenever the Buseys get a little stank, you gotta blood for them. They're a wacky group.
But this game, you know, Newcastle played great. Obviously, they got the equalizer.
Anyway, his leg amazing.
They got the equalizer late in the game from was it Fabian Schär. I think the main talking
about who scored the sliding goal. Who knew that angle was possible? I didn't know there was a place on your foot where you could make the ball go that way. It was crazy.
It was disappointing for Liverpool to have that lead and obviously drop points.
I've been saying points will be dropped by everybody.
Just fine. But I think the main talking point here is, again, how great Virgil van Dijk was, even though they gave it the 3 goals, but he was great in the game. And then also, and Mo Salah.
Mosal was incredible.
It gets more week after week or match after match. It's getting more ridiculous. Like what is the holdup?
I honestly think he scores so that he can do the post game interviews.
Like, hey me,
yes, he could be like, I don't know, bro. They don't want me to do any. Y'all want these goals?
Okay, because I'm gonna be available real soon.
City sliding.
How much better? Not only that, how much better does he have to play, but how much more of a leader does he have to be?
He's an exceptional human being.
It's kind of wild, and that they're even in this kind of situation, because it shouldn't even really be discussed, because he is way too important to that team. The other match that had some interesting talking points was Leicester, West Ham. Ruud van Nistelrooy is now the new coach at Leicester. Was this his first game on the sideline? I think it was.
Yeah, absolutely was, because he was at the last match, but not on the sideline.
And his team leads the game. They were up 3-0 at one point. But I believe the final result was 3-1. But now for West Ham, Julian Lopetegui.
Isn't it Julian?
Julian? Is it Julian or Julian?
Julian.
Julian. Okay.
I don't think it's, there's no I. I'm pretty sure there's no I in Julian.
Okay. It's two Bs, everybody. There's two Bs.
Crazy.
Why do we call it?
Doesn't make any sense. Is it West Ham? Is it West Ham? It's two U's, sound, but two V's.
Okay. So, but
Lopetegui. You could have just done that.
Lopetegui, whether the lowercase W is that, sort of, technically. Anyway.
Not technically.
So Lopetegui, now.
Well, he's not on the hot seat. He's sitting on a bowl. He's sitting on charcoals. This is. He's toast. He's cooked. They basically said they want him. I think West Ham said, I don't know where this came from, but West Ham Lopetegui can manage the next match.
Right.
Against Wolves. Hell of a going away gift.
how kind yeah. of them. Yeah, dude. I'm not watching West Ham week in and week out. I believe Everton played West Ham 2-3 weeks ago, and I believe it was a 0-0 draw or maybe 1-1. And even against Everton, which I'm like, all right, it's West Ham, we might have a tough time here. They looked really bad. Just even the players that you sort of expect to have a little bit of flair and shine, like Lucas Paquetá or whatever, mm-hmm. and there's just nothing. I don't know who sort of is excited about even just playing on this squad right now.
Lopetegui is not the type of manager these fans wanted, man. When they asked for David Moyes to be sacked,
mm-hmm.
it's because they wanted someone. They said two things. I remember their fans going on every podcast, talking to everyone. We talked to Jamie, our podcast editor for a while. He was a big West Ham guy. So I asked him. Everyone said the same thing. They've got a bunch of young players that are ready to come up into the first team. They want a manager that understands how to sort of bring up the young players and get them playing. So someone closer to like what Mikel Arteta has done and what looks like Ruben Amorim wants to do. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I think, was doing a lot of that. Freddie Ljungberg was doing that previously. Things like that. Want to bring up the young players. The second thing they want is someone who plays an attractive style of football.
Right.
Right. Something the David Moyes era was so frustrating to watch because you've got these electric players that weren't being given the freedom to go be electric. Where the hell did West Ham hear that and go, Julian Lopetegui, bro? This guy's got such a defensive, boring style.
And he's also, he lost the Real Madrid. He agreed to the Real Madrid job while he was at Spain. Then they sacked
him.
With
the Spanish national team.
Yeah.
And then he agrees to, then he admits. It's like open, like they announced. Yeah. After this, I'm taking the rest. Yeah, and they were like, how about right now? How about you can't be here, bruv?
So there's a little bit of like sort of controversy around him to begin with.
And also he left, was it Wolves?
He was at Sevilla.
No, but what's the other English team he was at? I think it was Wolves.
Yeah.
Was it Wolves? Yeah. Or Watford? Wolves. So he was, you could say it into the mic, by the way. people see me going, oh yeah. there's a mic right in front of you. So Wolves, spelled with two V's. So he was at Wolves. He was promised a certain amount of budget and certain decisions would be made from the front office. And they kind of just like lied to him. They're like, yeah, totally. We'll do that. Dude, I was totally planning on doing that anyway. So he kind of like left. That's part of me where I'm like, oh, the Spain thing doesn't matter as much anymore because look at the integrity this man showed here. And now I'm like, nah, but he still doesn't offer that electricity.
It's just not. Look, I mean, West Ham fans should be excited a little bit. You know, they recently won a European trophy not too long ago. Like that.
Yeah, but this next measure was supposed to be this step to the next level.
And Leicester are a team that are pretty
awful. But Graham Potter, that's the big name being tossed around for this job. Does he not just fit in with West Ham?
Why would he go there, though?
Why not, dude? They've got a good young crop. They've got electric players.
He has. You know, Manchester United were the team that was a possibility.
Ruben Amorim.
He just feels like Graham Potter feels, with all due respect to West Ham fans, it feels like this is not a job that Graham Potter would want, and not a project that he would want.
It doesn't make sense to me if you go Brighton to United, fired from United. Right?
Yeah.
Was Chelsea in there?
Mm-hmm.
Brighton, Chelsea, United. Did he ever go to United?
No, he never went, but I'm saying that his name was in
Brighton, Chelsea, gets sacked from Chelsea, doing nothing, sitting back collecting a check.
He's on, he does stuff on like ITV or Sky or something.
He pops up every once in a while. But you're saying, oh, he should be United. That's what I was trying to get at.
Yeah.
He should be United. I think he's found the right place for him. It's a step above Brighton. Not on par with Chelsea because Chelsea's won every single trophy you can.
Yeah.
But still pretty good.
Last thing before we talk to Amir Lowry. The DFB Pokal, Bayern played Bayer Leverkusen.
Leverkusen was there?
You mean Bayern. It was Bayern there. Is that what you're saying?
No, I meant Leverkusen because that wasn't the old Leverkusen. They should be beating Bayern. They should be balling on Bayern with one player down.
Oh, okay. Good point. Yeah, because Bayern looked pretty threatening even with 10 men.
Bro, if it wasn't for Alphonso Davies just completely not tracking Grimaldo.
I mean, it's a... look, even with 11v11... And no Harry Kane on on Bayern Munich. I still think Bayer Leverkusen probably still has a decent chance. They're a very good team and they were very good last year.
Yeah, but I think last year's team would have completely balled out on that squad.
Possibly. But the red card for Manuel Neuer, his first red card. I saw you guys talking about it on Morning Footy yesterday or 2 days ago. But this
great open field tackle.
Great open field tackle. Honestly, it reminded me of the hit on Trevor Lawrence, the Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback, where I'm like, bro, he is. I can't even, I'm watching Manuel Neuer, and you can tell he doesn't know if he's exactly going to get there, but his instinct first is you see the head go down. Like in the NFL, they tell you do not target with your head, and right. He sort of kind of did.
Well, he kind of pulls out of it, but people were saying like, oh, he got caught in two minds, so he tried to pull out. I don't know. I think he saw that and he was like, well, I gotta take this dude out.
Right.
When you turn your back fully on the ball coming in, I no longer believe you were going for the ball. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
Most people don't head the ball, clear it with the back of their head.
There is a little bit of like you're seeing he's trying to like protect himself. I love this. We just found this photo of Manuel Neuer charging at a matador.
His first red card of his career,
which is remarkable.
That's insane. But also he went big. You know what I mean?
He
if
did.
You don't do it
on the big stage.
You know what I mean? No petty crimes here. My man went full felony.
I just thought the hit itself. He had frimpong, right?
Yeah, frimpong.
And where I'm like, yo, Frimpong is lucky it did not have a more severe injury. Because especially when you watch it in slow-mo.
The head bouncing off the pitch.
Not even that too, but like his like chest and torso sort of like slowly sort of bend like a slow-mo scene in The Matrix. And it just could have been so much worse. There was...
Which brings me to this point. They say when you get a hit like that, they say he got his clock cleaned.
Right.
Why? Why is that what we say?
this is going to be a...
Cleaning a clock seems
two
like
V's.
A nice thing.
Is this going to be a two V's?
Oh, you want... We could really turn this podcast into, hey, you know what I just saw? But think about that. Clean this clock sounds like a nice thing. This is completely taking almost the soul out of a human if you watch the way this hit goes.
There was some people didn't agree that it was a red card. Even in our comments, at CJ McCauley on Twitter, he said, quote, I think it's a harsh red, especially at the 17th minute, and the attacker not even having the ball, which he did control the ball. He would have controlled it if he wasn't struck by a giant German man. He says, thus, not truly a goal-scoring opportunity. He isn't actually the last defender, and CONCACAF would laugh at that being considered violent. Because I responded to him that it was a pretty violent hit, in my opinion.
Yeah. CONCACAF would not laugh at that unless you pay them.
Okay. They'd be like, yo, that's hilarious. here's my routing number.
That's wild. You do Bitcoin by any chance?
No, this was a... it was a big turning point. Obviously, it was the turning point of the game.
Absolutely it was. In a relatively boring game.
But weirdly enough, like the result itself it wasn't too much of a shock because you could, especially given that Bayer Leverkusen, I think, has won the last four or five matches.
They have five without a loss. I don't know if it's wins.
So they're still pretty good. They're not the Invincibles that they were last year, right. But still pretty decent. But yeah, so a fair result, I think, for Bayern Munich, regardless if the red happened or not. All right, let's get to our next segment. We're going to be chatting with Amir Lowry. We're going to be talking about the Open Goal Project. We're going to talk about MLS Cup a little bit. That's happening
so much
this
on.
Weekend. So a lot to go over. So come right back.
How about this?
Look at this. We're just inviting family now on the show.
Every once in a while, people that you just see since we started, and you're like, what does this guy do? You know? And eventually, you find out.
Why are you always around?
No one knows why we're here. And we don't know why you're here. We should probably talk to you. And then you find out these are cool people that do cool things in the world of soccer. And look, when we started the show, it was to build up the sport, right?
Yes.
Some people do it by, like, professionally. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
We're just yuck yucks on mics, you know?
That's all we got to offer. Yeah. But this, our next guest, absolutely honored. A guy who when I was emceeing the congressional soccer game at Audi Field, this man was on the pitch. And we've obviously crossed paths for years. He was drafted by the Colorado Rapids in Major League Soccer in 2005 and now running the Open Goal Project out in D.C. Everyone, big round of applause for Amir Lowry. Amir, what's up, brother?
Blessed to be here. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Right. You know, there's a
close to that mic.
And I love just the way you introduce yourself, because for years, this has always been there's such a positive vibe and great energy.
That's why I didn't trust him when I first met him. You know, nice people in this business is few and far between. And you're just like nice in general. You're not nice because it's going to get you something or
most
blah,
of
blah.
The time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the time.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I don't know you that well.
Because when you think of professional footballers, and that's kind of the main thing, I would go further than just nice. You are a warm person
around.
And when we were in D.C. After the congressional game, and just chatting with you and Timothy, I'm like, that's like a couple months ago when we had talked about you coming on the show. I'm like, yo, this is a good dude.
This is a good dude.
This is a good man.
And
when you were talking about Open Goal Project, I thought it was a great opportunity to have you come by. But yeah, you came from DC. You just flew in. So just a couple of things before we even talk about Open Goal and everything that you're doing. The congressional game, because I haven't really gotten to talk to a lot of people that have played in the game. I didn't play in it. I've been just calling the game. And it's obviously like, you know, Congress people and senators and people involved.
I honestly think people you tell think you're lying and making it up that this event happened. Because people are like, wait, what?
They have a Republican versus Democrat soccer game that is obviously U.S. Soccer Foundation.
Well, don't forget, there's like three independent soccer players waiting outside, but no one.
they can't get enough votes to get in the game.
You gotta get 5% when you're allowed in.
To hold it. But Jill Stein, you play.
Why are you out there? Yo, Nader, you gotta chill, dog. You're too old.
But playing in that game, what are your sort of memories of it, and what do you think of it? Because I'm calling.
And is it surreal?
Calling the game is like kind of weird and fun.
Have you ever 2-foot tackled AOC?
Because some of the people that did play, like California Congressman Eric Swalwell, was there. I think both years. The eye patch guy? What's his name?
I can't remember his name.
I can't remember his name. Dan Crenshaw.
Crenshaw
there.
You said he's actually pretty good, right?
He's pretty good, but the man plays pretty present. Okay.
So
playing in that game, what does it kind of feel like to just be, it's a little bit strange and surreal, but what is it like as a player?
I would relate it to what division you play, men's league?
The lowest.
Yeah. I would relate it to a few levels below that, maybe. But no. It's a great experience. You know, there's a lot of pros, ex-pros on the field.
Right.
You know, the Congress members really do take it the most seriously of anybody. Uh-huh. I think they've got some deep-seated, you know, like bones to pick and competitiveness that comes out in that game. So it's interesting.
You vote
from
for
that
my bill. You know, there's a lot of that. Yeah.
So I played for the Republican team. I'm an independent personally.
Okay.
Yeah, more left leaning, but I've played for the Republican team 3 years running, I think. Man, we won all three times.
Not
this summer, but last summer I did have a hat trick.
That's right. Yeah.
Put that out there.
Maybe this is a good way to predict the election.
This is like the octopus who decides to walk up winners.
Could be.
If the Republican soccer team wins, they lose the election.
Could be.
It is a fun thing. When we were there, we were obviously talking about Open Goal and everything. You know, and one of the conversations that came up just about, you know, U.S. Soccer Foundation. Also does a lot of work to obviously just grow the game and get kids playing. The U.S. Soccer right. Foundation was started. It was like a, I forgot the verbiage that I should remember, but it was basically started because of the being awarded the World Cup in 94. Yeah. So right. they started it to really just grow the popularity of the game and get kids playing. But a big issue in general that we've talked about this for years is obviously pay to play and how cost prohibitive it is for just children to be involved in the game. And you're trying to do something about that.
Yeah, we are. You know, not just trying.
Yeah.
It's been 9 years since I started Open Goal Project. And we initially started just supporting a few players, you know, to navigate their journey playing pay to play youth mm-hmm. soccer. So these were incredibly talented young people who had aspirations of playing in college and at higher levels. And really based on their family situation, based on their economic situation, based on, you know, just their circumstances in life, they weren't able to access higher level soccer. So I met my co-founder around the same time, you know, that I was thinking about this issue, and we started working together to get a few players integrated into the system. And really it was from that point that we saw how many barriers exist for players from marginalized communities, mainly Black and Latino kids or immigrant kids, you know, coming from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, yeah. right? So that work that we did in our initial 2 to 3 years really showed us all the layers that were there and all the inequities that persist and prevent kids from playing. Obviously money is the first and most important thing that, you know, we need to address as a nation mm-hmm. if we're going to be a real footballing nation at some point.
Right, makes sense.
But, you know, there's a lot of other things that exist and are perpetuated within the USU soccer system that, you know, keep kids on the sidelines, ultimately limit our talent pool as a nation. Right. And then we see the effects of that in our national team, in, you know, the American players that we're producing at the highest levels, and not just on the men's side, on the women's side also.
So where are we? Where, because when we started the show, it was 2015. It was a very different landscape. Mm-hmm. Right. I think the idea of getting kids to play the sport for free and because they're good and they want to get better versus their parents can afford it was like a really hot, big talking point. From that point to where we are now, how much better has it gotten?
I think it's gotten worse.
Oh, honestly. Okay. Hold on. What's the button? There it is. That's sad.
I think it has gotten worse. You know, the business.
MLS academies are free, right?
For the most part, you know, I've heard different anecdotes from different people who obviously are in different academies or different things. And I've heard even to be a part of some MLS academies, there are costs associated. Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Right. So most of them, I think, are majority free. But if you think about, there's an MLS Next, which is the youth league, right? Their showcase is right now in Indio, California, I think. So the tournament is 5 or 6 days, right? You can send your kid, if you're a parent,
You
can send your kid for a week. And we've had similar experiences with some of our kids who are playing at a high level. You can just pawn your kid off on somebody else, send them out there. They got to get a hotel room. They got to get back and forth from the games. But a lot of what people don't consider within these hidden costs is that the parent oftentimes needs to travel with
that group.
A parent, unless the academy and the setup is super professional. So then there's another layer of cost, right? Mm. And then, you know, what are siblings doing during that time?
Yeah.
You know, what does the whole family dynamic look like? So I think that in a lot of ways, the experience for youth soccer players has gotten more complex. There's more travel.
Jeez.
You know, there's just more hidden costs, woven into the fabric of USU soccer.
Yeah, it's a thing you mentioning that, it sort of... I rented, my wife and I, we got a couch recently, and it was a gift from my sister-in-law, but we were trying to figure out like what's the best way to get it to our apartment, And it was like, oh, let's just get a U-Haul.
You said, what about these kids that want to play soccer? They want to carry this couch for some money?
No, but we said, I was suggesting like TaskRabbit or something like that. And she was like, oh, let's just get a U-Haul and we can all just do it together. It'll be cheaper. And then it's like the U-Haul, we look at the U-Haul prices and it's like $19.95 plus, you know,
for the first five minutes.
For the mileage.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we get the final bill and it's like nearly $200. And it's like, okay. Well, that's not how you advertise.
Did you mean $199 and a half?
That's exactly. Not how you advertise. I'm like, should I be upset? Should I have known that I was gonna get got?
Exactly.
And then there's a little bit of like, especially mentioning like those hidden fees. I sort of wonder is who has to give it? Who is the entity or the body that has to say like, all right, we're gonna let go of this potential money that we can make for right. The bigger picture. Is it U.S. soccer? Is it the clubs that you know that the kids play on, or is it the MLS teams? Mm. Who has to just come to the table and say like, we're gonna just say let's remove the profit motive right. here so that we can finally get a little bit further as a footballing nation.
Yeah. Easier, I think, way easier said than done, but everybody would have to sacrifice.
Right.
And the issue...
But who's at the top of that food chain?
There is, and that's what I was going to say, there really is no governing body for U.S. youth soccer. The federation does not...
What about the organization called U.S. Soccer? What if we start our focus
what about
there?
Them, huh?
What if we start our focus there?
What about the federation?
Yeah. What about them? Are they... Do they not have...
No.
A hand to play in this?
They
can they make a decree that no one pays for youth soccer anymore?
I don't think they could, honestly. And I think it's like the Pandora's box, right? You know, it's gone. It's been gone. You know, people have taken these ideas that they're going to build business around a youth soccer club or a youth soccer league or an organization,
yeah.
right? The dangerous part of the dangerous thing is that they're all 501c, not C3 nonprofits.
Mm.
So under the guise of, you know, developing community a lot of times, which
right,
is
right.
really our core focus, and under the guise of, you know, benefiting the game, they're really just business entities, right? And in the DC area, in the DMV, there's an average of $3 to $6 million pay-to-play youth soccer clubs are bringing in revenue annually.
Wow.
So, and 90% of those, we've pulled a little bit of research, 90% of those revenues are fee-for-service. So that's a $2,500 or $3,000 or $4,000 registration fee.
Mm-hmm.
That's all the cost for camps and tournaments and everything else
yeah,
in between.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if we are to do better as a footballing nation and figure out, you know, how to bring more talent into our the USU soccer pool, you know, everyone's going to have to sacrifice some of those revenues and some of those profits to be able to make things work a little bit better. And I would go even further. You know, I think the system has gone so far towards business and the profit motive that now we need some really radical solutions to offer pathways and opportunities and outlets for talented players who can't access those systems, you know, to reach the highest levels of the game.
Yeah. Dude, I mean, yeah, it's, I'm trying to not be sad after all
yeah.
that you just said.
For some reason, when you really explain the facts, it makes everything depressing. What would be the winning thing you could do? Is it if the best talent wanted to play for Open Goal Project, and then that talent ends up signing a professional contract and a solidarity payment is paid to you? Is that like, if that is seen as a potential, then most of the best talents will want to play for Open Goal?
Maybe. And I do think that's part of it. I think that we're missing the bigger business that is global football.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we could be a nation that's really producing players and selling more players.
Right.
I think that could be a motivation for people to operate a little bit differently in the space.
Yeah. Is it? I guess it's something, I mean, you look at other countries and there's such a deep and profound love of the sport and the game that almost like culture and tradition of you know, the way you make money is like you develop great players.
It wouldn't allow you to do this.
And
it wouldn't allow you to do, you know, a pay for play system.
That, you know, America is going to America and is going to really focus
capitalism.
On and capitalism kind of like is the main hustle and the main focus that it's like, can we sort of. Because it's almost like if we say, hey, what you maybe let's focus on not making as much money, but it might lead to a better footballing, not just culture, but economy.
Yep.
20 years down the line. And then some people be like, well, are you trying to take money out of my pocket?
Exactly.
And it's just like, no, yes, but like, no. But I think at the kind of, at the end of the day, the main thing that I think we all sort of focus on is that if we focus so much more on the profit than the actual children that we're trying to like give an opportunity to, that they're the ones that are hurt at the end of the day. Because when, you know, I always hear that more people, more kids play soccer in the United States, more kids play football in the United States than any other country in the world. And there's, but we all see it, and we've all grown up around people that were obsessed with playing when, you know, from like 9 years old to like 13 or 14. And then that's it. They don't even watch the game. They've never been to a game.
They're done.
They're just absolutely done. They're so detached from the sport. And I think that we've seen the results sort of speak for themselves of like what our youth system leaves afterwards. Yeah. And it's like it could change if enough people were really on board.
Yep. And I think that's where, you know, you do need major investment. When I talk about those revenue numbers that clubs are bringing in, you need major investment to build clubs now, like our organization and our club, you know, that can operate differently, have a different, you know, setup, a different system, but they still need to take part in this pay-to-play ecosystem, because that's what's kind of grown and it's out of control now, but it's unchecked. So nobody's going to be able to rein that in, I don't think, you know, effectively.
Yeah.
So how do we build clubs and systems and, you know, pathways, like I said, to make sure that people have that access is the key.
Why does a parent pick that club instead of another one? Like, what makes a parent want to pick a certain youth club for their kid?
It's marketing and it's capitalism. I think a lot of the landscape is also a little bit politicized. You know, you have bigger leagues like MLS Next or like ECNL.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if a club has that moniker and that affiliation, then maybe they can charge a little bit more for their registration.
But a parent would pick that because then they would assume the kid has a fast track to MLS?
Or if they sense that their kid really wants to play, or they themselves as a parent wants to push their kid to play.
Uh-huh. That's a big part of it, I'm sure.
Right, yeah. And they see those, you know, affiliations that a club has. I think that's a major, you know, incentive for them to pay the extra dollars.
Yeah.
Because, okay, my kid might get recruited to play in college, or my kid might get an opportunity to play at an MLS academy. Yeah. So
I guess that's the part where I'm trying to figure out, like, what is it that a non-pay-for-play youth academy, you know, I don't know if that exists. I'm sure that exists. But what would they have to do to make parents go, well, I'd rather put my kid in there because there's a better chance that they'll, I guess, go to college, which we also kind of don't want your kid to go to college. Right? Go online while you're playing pro. You know,
one of those damn books. Open ChatGPT.
Yo, you want your kid to be a nerd, dog? Chill. Okay. Your phone got a calculator on it. You don't need it.
So just to speak a little bit about Open Goal Project. So we started funding those players to play for pay-to-play clubs. We saw a few of our earliest players have tremendous success. One of the first players that we worked with, young lady, her name is Ariana. She just graduated she's about to graduate from James Madison University.
Wow.
They're on a full ride. She'll probably do a grad year and continue her playing career. And then she has aspirations to play at the next level, which I really believe that she can. So we learned from those earliest players that, yes, it was almost like proof of concept. Yes, they can get there. The only things that are missing are these different supports, be it financial or logistical or mentorship, right? Or if it's help with college essays and applications, right? So we learned all of those things that kids from our communities were lacking, right? And we brought everything back at a point in 2019, and we started our own club. So we have a fully funded club. We currently have 8 teams that play in a pay-to-play league in the DMV area.
But the kids, again, do not pay to be a part of this.
And yeah,
the
parents don't pay, yeah. My philosophy from leadership perspective, you know, is that any small cost on a program is going to price somebody out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's somebody's not going to have it at any given time, right? So right. So the only way to make sure that it is inclusive, right, is to make it 100% free to play. So our system, yes, we are, you know, pretty early in our process. We started in 2019, our club. So we're 5 years in, but, you know, the pandemic slowed us down pretty drastically. We couldn't really do much during those couple years. So we're in process of building our culture and building our club to compete against, you know, pay-to-play clubs.
Sure.
We have teams that, you know, do have considerable success also, right? We're beating pay-to-play clubs with 100% free-to-play system. I think that makes a big statement off the bat there. And, you know, as we progress and become more and more competitive, the goal would be to, you know, try to figure out how we can get into some of the more acclaimed leagues, right? And and you know, really get our kids the exposure that they need.
No, it's just to reach that next. It's level. A great story because sometimes I'm sure it must feel a little bit of like David versus Goliath.
It is
kind of at times.
So except in that story, Goliath doesn't keep getting bigger. Yeah. Like, Jesus Christ!
So, but that's awesome. I want to just wrap up with just talking. Obviously, MLS Cup is this weekend. I know we were talking about you got drafted by the Colorado Rapids, but you didn't really play much in Major League Soccer. What was your experience just becoming a pro? And obviously, everybody has like, you know, the what sometimes the dream actually is, you know, what the dream is doesn't always match up with reality.
Yeah.
But what was your experience becoming a pro and how did you deal with it?
Yeah, definitely the dream and reality were a bit different, you know, playing in MLS 1.0. You know, I graduated from Wake Forest in 2005. I got drafted in 2005 by the Rapids. You know, our facilities at that time at Wake Forest were light years ahead of where I went and started my pro career.
Sure.
So our training facility for the Rapids at that time was in Westminster, Colorado, which is outside the city. But we had a wing of a community center, and there were public fields in the back. So we were there. We shared a weight room with, like, general public.
Sure.
Right. We had our own
little Open Goal Project training ground. I think
it's better. Yeah.
And then
grandpa, like, what are
exactly,
you
doing? Exactly.
What are you doing? How are you getting that exercise?
And then in the, you know, there were training fields in the back that we used. And then also, you know, youth clubs used, you know, on the weekends the evenings. So it was a unique experience. You know, wouldn't trade any of it. When I came in the league, there were 12 teams in MLS.
Hmm. Who was on your team when you got drafted?
A lot of big timers, a lot of good friends. Pablo Mascherani was on that team.
Yeah.
Cal Beckerman,
legend.
Joe Cannon, Jeff Cunningham.
Wow.
You know, the pretty long list of really, really talented players and great guys.
That was MLS 1.0, though.
Yeah, it was. It was.
That was before Miami and Tampa were contracted, right?
No, after.
It
that
had
was
already
2001
folded.
Or something. Yeah. So MLS Cup is this weekend. New York Red Bulls against LA Galaxy. This is going to be, just to get your thoughts on it, we're very vocally NYCFC fans, so this is a hard time for us.
I'm aware.
Come on, LA Galaxy.
I've been an LA Galaxy fan since day one,
bro.
Okay? Edson Buttle, number one, right?
Yeah. Beckham statue, got one in my apartment.
But this MLS Cup final, and just maybe you can even just talk about where MLS is from where it was, and then even, you know, having Messi in the league these last 2 years, to get to this pinnacle of MLS Cup, even without Messi there, what are you sort of most excited about when it comes to this weekend and this game?
I think you know, my excitement would be around just MLS Cup final is always an exciting game. It's always unpredictable. You know, I've seen a lot of great finals, I feel like, and I'm sure this one won't disappoint. You know, and there's good storylines in this one also, obviously.
Sure. Yeah.
Ricky Pouge going out.
Marco Royce, will he be healthy?
Yep. Yeah. And New York obviously coming in as the underdogs. And,
last time upset.
08 was the last time. They lost in 08 to who? I forgot who they lost to. I don't remember who it was.
I don't remember. Columbus Crew?
Oh, probably been the Cove Crew. I think it was 08 that they won. That's
good memory if they did. I think though it'll be a great game, and you know, I would probably lean towards the Galaxy winning on home turf, you know. But you never know, like I said, with a cup final, right? Anything can happen, especially with Ricky Pouge missing.
Dan Crenshaw could take Ricky Pouge's place. We know he has the heart in there. So, Open Goal Project. Obviously, people can go to opengoalproject.org if they want to support, make a donation, follow Open Goal Project on Instagram as well. It's just simple at Open Goal Project. But Amir, this has been really dope. Thank you for shedding light a little bit on everything going on in youth soccer and American soccer. And hopefully, you know,
the next time we talk to you, it won't be worse. It'll be better. Maybe that's
hopefully.
A good goal.
I mean, that's what we're pushing to do. And, you know, the more people that really take an interest in this and, you know, just come up with some creative, innovative ways to do things differently, you know, the better we can do. And closer we can get to becoming a footballing nation.
Get AI on this.
Yeah, exactly.
What's Allen Iverson going to do
do a couple step overs.
And Amir, you can follow Amir on Instagram as well. Prince Lowry as well. After the movie Bad Boys came out and Mike Lowry got very popular, did your life change in any way?
How do you know that? Like, what a pull. When did Bad Boys come out?
What, 15
years
96?
Ago? 20 years ago?
Jeez, 30 years ago.
What came out in the 90s? Bad Boys? Man, but the new one just came out. I mean, they're very old men. That still you know Messi did an ad for the new Bad Boys film. Yeah, so young people still love it. Okay. Yeah. Did your life change in any way? Did people say your name a little differently?
What's your last name? Lowry.
I love it. Mike Lowry, it's an honor as always. Yeah. Amir, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thanks,
appreciate
guys.
It. Shout out to Amir Lowry for coming through.
This is what we do on the show.
Okay. Just bringing in good people.
You know, just trying to cure the world of some of its ills.
Exactly. Not all.
Not all. Some.
Some.
All right. Leave some for the rest of us.
Okay. We can't hog up all the, you know, glory.
No, of course not.
Be the saviors that the world has always needed.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing our best. So shout out to Amir. And also go check out very, very soon. I did a post-show Keepy Up piece with.
Ooh.
With Amir Lowry. So it's always fun to.
I hate for people to peek behind the curtain, but that's why you look a little shiny right now. You're a little flustered.
I'm a little sweaty. Okay.
And not that's only, why I do not.
Not only because. Not only because he's very charming, but no,
just a small part of it,
just a small factor. But always, whenever professional footballers want to juggle with a soccer comedian, mm-hmm. I feel honored that they would even go to this level. You know,
I think it's a charitable contribution.
Oh, wait,
I am
a 501c3.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If you juggle with me,
and so. If you ask our wives, we're definitely not for profit. So,
okay, so shout out to Amir. We can't end the show today without talking a little bit about the U.S. Women's National Team and one specific player in mind, Alyssa Nair.
Hung up the gloves.
Hung up the gloves for the national team in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Isn't
it kind of weird though? Like, I think she's what, 36, but still feels kind of young, especially for a goalkeeper.
She weirdly does not feel like she's been playing that long.
No.
But yet, when you look at the stats, she has like 100 and something caps or whatever.
Well, is it Emma Hayes called her the greatest goalkeeper in U.S. history?
Which is a bold.
That's a big statement.
You know, when there's a Hope Solo.
Well, see, that was, I think the point was when Hope Solo retired or, you know, whatever, left or was asked to leave. I forget what the situation
okay.
was.
Her services were no longer needed.
Somebody yelled last call on goalkeeping. She bowed out, right? Whatever the situation was. And I think at that point, she still could have kept playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she leaves. And I think a lot of fans were like, okay, maybe there's reasons to not have her on the team, but who's going to play as well as she does? We don't have someone to take over. And here comes Alyssa Nair.
Mm-hmm.
And I think did such an admirable job past that. She gave so much to U.S. soccer and U.S. women's soccer and women's soccer in general, especially in the wake of losing what we all thought would be an impossible person to replace.
Sure. I think in the line of all the U.S. women's national team goalkeepers that we obviously have in our mind, and these are the great, the Hope Solo, the Brianna Scurry.
Yeah, Brianna Scurry, for sure.
Alyssa Nair is probably, I think maybe we'll know, we almost like don't know that much about her. This is why Trinity Rodman and Sophia Smith and everybody hug her, and she looks uncomfortable.
She's very uncomfortable with human contact.
She's like, nobody.
All we know about her is that her nickname is Uncle. That's all we know.
She's like, don't hug me, but just shoot a soccer ball 80 miles per hour at me. That's where I feel safe.
You want to show me love? Hit it your hardest.
So we're looking at the quote now from Emma Hayes. She said, quote, in my opinion, Alyssa Nair is the greatest goalkeeper this country's ever had. Most people don't really realize what it takes to stay at the top. For her to do it for the number of years she has done it, wow. She's quietly, and I don't say that as an insult, she's quietly been effectively one of the greatest goalkeepers that we've ever had. And given that the storylines behind Hope Solo, even Brianna Scurry, even the jockeying for that first for that spot, mm-hmm, between Hope and Brianna, Alyssa Nair just has not really had any of that. She's just been, we know who is the best keeper. There hasn't even in the last decade, there hasn't even been that much of a conversation
maybe
of somebody.
In the last World Cup, there was a little bit because Chicago Red Stars were playing so badly.
Right, right.
People were like, well, she's just not going to be in form. Like, it took a historically bad season for us to be like, well, maybe she should just be a backup, you know? And even then, as soon as the World Cup starts, you realize you're wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, even in the Women's World Cup, and we all remember the penalties against Sweden and everything, nobody ever looked at that. You know, I wouldn't even call it it was a poor performance, but it had really nothing to do with Alyssa
Nair. Not because of the goalkeeping. Yeah. So, in fact, she probably kept us in more games than we needed to be in.
So, it's a kind of a sad moment, but we got to... You left before Ali Krieger's retirement thing. You left before Alyssa Nair got there.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to meet...
That damn morning footy schedule!
So I got to...
I'm leaving, Sudeikis is walking in. Think about that.
So I got to hang out with Alyssa Nair for a little bit because she and Megan Rapinoe flew from
Chicago
when the Red Stars and the Rain were playing each other in the last game of the season. And they flew to surprise Ali Krieger. Alyssa Nair shows up. And I think I've told this story before on the show. I tweeted about it recently. But as soon as she walked in, I said hi to Megan because Megan does know us, which also feels weird.
Crazy
again
to say.
She was excited to say hello to me, which still feels surreal. But I didn't know Alyssa, and I said hello because she was standing next to Megan. And I said, hi, my name's Christian. And she goes, hi. And then I said, the first thing I said to her was, that ball didn't cross the line. And she goes, it didn't. It didn't cross the line. And the way we know Megan Rapinoe for several years, Alyssa talked to me like, oh, yo, that's fam for you? So I'm going to talk to them like
I don't
family.
Know who this guy is, but he gets it. You know what I mean?
So I loved that interaction that we had. So, no, this is, it obviously sucks for the U.S., you know, losing such an incredible shot
so
stopper. I don't know. There's something to goalkeepers where you think like, they can go to like they're 45. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You know what? Goalkeepers are a little screwy, right? Like we've interviewed a lot of them. I don't really see that with Alyssa.
This is like
she's a little calm.
Yeah. What are you making a rational decision for? You're a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
You have to. But you know what? To her credit,
you should be the bananas one.
To her credit, she's not. She's leaving the international game on top. She's not. No, nobody's saying, oh, why is Alyssa here?
She's leaving the football before the football leaves her.
Exactly. There it is.
You know, speaking of goalkeepers, did you see Thibaut Courtois? He had a quote about Mbappe. Look it up real quick.
I didn't. Okay. All right.
Trust me when I tell you, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about right away.
Okay.
So this was obviously Mbappe is having, you know, I think he scored 10 goals so far for Real Madrid. He's having a good season, but he's not having an Mbappe season. And Mbappe just missed a penalty in this last match. So there's a lot of question around him. Thibaut Courtois wants to calm people down. Everyone be like, bro.
Is this it? Right yeah. Here? Okay.
So this is the quote. You want to read this?
Yeah. So I have not seen this. So the quote is the first time I'm reading this says, quote, the Mbappe situation is like a bottle that has liquid inside and it seems like it won't come out, but suddenly it all comes out. All right, Thibaut.
Bro, he was referencing a ketchup bottle, by the way.
Right.
So he says, when you bang it, then it starts to come out and then it doesn't stop coming out.
Ah, gotcha.
And I just want to ask Thibaut, I know you weren't actually thinking about the Kylian Mbappe situation. What was on your mind, dog?
This is, there's no way, like, you know, you say this in a barber shop. You're getting hit with paws 4,000 times.
There's a lot of ayos will ring around the room.
Hey, fam.
Well, you know what? Here's my thing. I think paws is mostly stupid, right?
Of course. Without a doubt.
99.9% of the time.
As most conversations in barbershops are pretty stupid.
Yeah, by the way, that's like the prerequisite for barbershop conversation. But what I wonder, did you do it? Did you say it that way on purpose?
Yeah.
Because there's a million ways to say what you wanted to say. This ain't one of those million, dog.
Okay.
The Mbappe situation is like a ketchup bottle that has liquid inside, and it seems like it won't come out. But suddenly, it all comes out.
Thibaut, you just haven't met the right lady. I don't know.
Or maybe you met the right lady. That's where this reference
came from. It sounds a little too tantric. All right? Yeah, take it easy. I don't know what's going on here.
4 hours in.
I swear, it's not you, it's me, honey.
So look, all I'm saying is, for those Real Madrid fans who really wanted this Mbappe signing are now sitting by waiting for that moment to happen, apparently it's coming.
Look, main thing here is Mbappe, he's looking bad.
He's looking lacking confidence. He doesn't look bad.
He's missing a penalty just yesterday. And look, I'm like you said, the fans are waiting for the liquid to come out. Yeah. And they're like, where is the liquid?
Aren't we all?
Kylian.
That's why we clicked on this video.
Okay. Buffering. No,
not now.
The liquid was just about to come out.
No, we don't care what the name of the pizza shop is, bro. Let's go.
All right.
Just ring the doorbell.
I just love that this is the same show where we're talking about pay to play and getting more kids involved.
That is the roller coaster. That is the Cooligans.
That's it. That's the show that we do. All right, everybody. All right. Thank you again for tuning in. Another fun show. Enjoy the Major League Soccer Cup Final this Saturday. Mm. All you G's out. All us G's. You know how we are.
Yeah. Bro, shouts to our favorite team, the LA Galaxy.
Been supporting them since day one.
Bro, we practically riot, bro.
Exactly, bro. Day one meaning Thursday, December. 5th.
Yeah, 100%, bro.
But for life.
Chicharito called us when he signed, bro.
Okay. So everybody knows how dedicated we've been.
100%,
all right?
Bro.
One of the originals.
Yeah. And you know how much we just love home teams. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
This is like a big thing for us.
Home team. I'm a big fan of home. Home team FC.
Bro, home team all day, bro.
All right, everybody. Thank you again for tuning in. Make sure you follow us on all socials, at Soccer Cooligans.
All of them.
Follow us on Blue Sky. We're out there growing. The liquid is coming out on Blue Sky.
Don't tell Thibaut.
You know how it is. So
he's growing and showing.
At SoccerCooligans.com on Blue Sky and subscribe to the YouTube channel as always. Thank you again for tuning in, everybody. Y'all the absolute best. Peace.
Love you guys.